Yongsung-miro watching that.
美国务卿发表印太策略演说，强化印太战略伙伴关系。奥地利将不派政要出席北京冬奥会。华盛顿邮报揭露文件，显示华为参与中国官方监控项目深度超过预期。
各位观众大家好，我是卡拉，欢迎收看美国观察。华盛顿邮报报道说，100多份华为公司的机密文件显示华为参与了中国政府的监控项目，稍后的节目中我们一同关注。美国观察的节目热线已经开通，欢迎您拨打0021-202-920-4990给我们留言，跟我们分享您对节目的看法，告诉我们您希望看到的节目内容。白宫周二表示，拜登总统与国会的看法一致，认为中国必须要为新疆的侵犯人权负责。美国国会众议院上周通过了防止强迫维吾尔族劳动法案，将禁止来自新疆的强制劳动产品。详细情况，请美国之音白宫记者黄耀义来介绍。耀义。
那我们知道，这个美国的众议院呢，是以压倒性的票数428票比一票的这个票数呢，来通过了防止强迫维吾尔族劳动法案。唯一的反对票呢，是来自肯塔基州共和党议员汤马斯·马西。那么该法案呢，将会建立一个可反驳的推定，也就是认定所有来自新疆的产品都是通过强制劳动来制造的。那众议院的议长佩洛西说呢，这项立法将是打击强制劳动的有效工具。他说，我们要向北京发出一个明确的讯息，这样的种族灭绝必须立刻结束。那么接下来呢，这个法案就进入参议院，那参议院如果通过的话，再送交到白宫，由拜登总统来签署。那么在这个星期二的白宫新闻简报会上呢，就问到说，拜登总统是否会来签署这项法案？那么在这个白宫的发言人沙奇也对此做出了回应。我们来看一下沙奇今天在白宫是怎么说的。
Our effort is to often provide technical assistance to ensure that that bills are implementable. But if the president will sign the bill, we have been clear that we share Congress's view that action must be taken to hold the PRC accountable for its human rights abuses and to address forced labor in Xinjiang. We've already taken action on the global stage in that regard, leading an effort that G7 putting in place financial sanctions and global Magnitsky visa restrictions. And I think that's evidence of our commitment to this.
那除此之外呢，以民主党来占多数席位的众议院还另外通过了两项的与中国人权相关的法案。一个是428票比零票的投票通过一个决议案，说国际奥委会与中国政府合作违反了自己的人权承诺。另外是以427票赞成一票反对通过了另外一个决议案，谴责中国对维吾尔族其他宗教以及少数民族群体实施的持续种族灭绝以及反人类罪，并且呼吁在联合国采取行动。那我们知道呢，这些环保团体是担心说，许多的这个太阳能板或是这些可再生能源的零件是在新疆制造，或者是由新疆制造零件来组成的，这是否会影响到拜登政府要来推广这个环保及可再生能源的努力？不过呢，白宫发言人沙奇之前就说过了，拜登总统已经开始重组全球的供应链，来确保包括像半导体的各项的产品能够在供应链上呢符合美国的国家安全，而这样子的重组也包括了这个可再生能源的供应链。卡拉，
好的，感谢耀义从白宫发来的报道。美国国务卿布林肯本周展开上任之后的第一次对东南亚的出访。布林肯星期二在印尼雅加达阐述美国的印太亚太策略，强化美国与亚太地区的战略伙伴关系。他说，美国决心确保在南中国海地区的航行自由与台湾海峡的和平与稳定，而种种的外交措施都是为了防止爆发冲突。下面是美国之音驻国务院记者站主任张荣香的报道。
我目前的位置是在印尼首都雅加达，
拜登政府正计划推动一个新的亚太经济框架。美国国务卿布林肯星期二在一场演讲当中表示，美国将继续致力于提升和亚太地区的合作与伙伴关系。
It's not about a contest between a U.S.-centric region or a China-centric region. The Indo-Pacific is its own region. Rather, it's about upholding the rights and agreements that are responsible for the most peaceful and prosperous period this region and the world has ever experienced. That's why there's so much concern from Northeast Asia to Southeast Asia and from the Mekong River to the Pacific Islands about Beijing's aggressive actions, claiming open seas as their own.Distorting open markets through subsidies to its state-run companies, denying the exports or revoking deals for countries whose policies it does not agree with, engaging in illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing activities. Countries across the region want this behavior to change. We do too.
布林肯星期一在与印尼总统佐科维多多见面之后，星期二与印尼外长雷特诺会晤，双方并且签署了合作备忘录。美国官员说，印尼是全球第三大民主国家，美国和印尼的战略伙伴关系基于许多共享的核心价值。在布林肯访问期间，美国与印尼官员讨论如何强化双边合作，共同因应对民主人权的挑战，以及气候变化危机与新冠病毒大流行病。一些分析认为，东南亚成为美国和中国这两个全球第一和第二大经济体之间的一个战略争夺地域。一些美国专家认为，美国需要提高战略重视和经济投入，来抗衡中国在东南亚地区对国际秩序所造成的挑战。
Five years ago, an international tribunal delivered a unanimous and legally binding decision.Firmly rejecting unlawful expansive South China Sea maritime claims as being inconsistent with international law. We and other countries, including South China Sea claimants, will continue to push back on such behavior. It's also why we have an abiding interest in peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait, consistent with our longstanding commitments. Threats are evolving. Our security approach has to evolve with them.We'll see closer civilian security cooperation to tackle challenges ranging from violent extremism to illegal fishing to human trafficking. And we'll adopt a strategy that more closely weaves together all our instruments of national power, diplomacy, military, intelligence, with those of our allies and our partners.
在印尼之后，布林肯将继续出访马来西亚以及泰国。以上是美国之音。驻国务院记者站主任张荣香从印尼首都雅加达所发来的随团采访报道。
华盛顿邮报报道说，一批中国华为公司的内部文件显示，华为参与了中国政府的监控项目。该报对华为公司100多份机密演示文稿进行了研究，3000多张幻灯片中，一些展示了警察或政府机构所需要的监视功能，显示这些幻灯片文稿是为了政府客服准备的。在一张幻灯片中，华为介绍了一个系统，称该系统可对涉恐、涉稳、正直重点人、肇事肇祸精神病人、犯罪前科人员等，从电子轨迹、车牌轨迹、人像轨迹、实名轨迹、关系网络等多个维度进行全方位智能化监测，解放蹲点盯人模式。这些幻灯片还详细介绍了华为设备在新疆地区的使用。华盛顿邮报去年曾报道称，华为测试了一款人工智能软件，可以识别维吾尔人并向警方报警。奥地利的官员将不会参加北京冬奥会，但奥地利表示，这并非是外交抵制或抗议，而是因为中国的新冠疫情限制措施。奥地利总理内哈默星期二说，由于新冠疫情，政界人士无法在中国亲自会见本国运动员，因此他更愿意在维也纳亲自会见本国的运动员。有关是否要外交抵制北京冬奥会的问题，欧盟领导人将在星期四举行的今年最后一次峰会上进行讨论。美国、加拿大、英国和澳大利亚等国已经宣布外交抵制北京冬奥会。 美国政府宣布外交抵制北京冬奥会，以兑现捍卫人权的承诺。不过，这对西藏活动人士齐美拉莫和杰森来说还不够。他们呼吁将赛事移出北京，因为在实施种族灭绝的国家举行奥运会违背奥运精神。齐美拉莫和杰森曾在希腊奥林匹亚举行的奥运圣火取火仪式上抗议被捕。他们对美国之音讲述了这段经历。
Chini and Jason, both of you were arrested during the flame lighting ceremony in Olympia in Greece recently. What was the charge? I would guess you understood the risk of being arrested before taking action. So what could you expect to get? And in retrospect, have you reached your goal?
First of all, thank you, Stella, for having us here. Yes, we did go into the action understanding that there might be a possible arrest. However, understanding the current situation inside of Tibet, Hong Kong, East Turkestan, and what is happening in the geopolitical situation against Taiwan and all of the South China Sea borders, it was very important for us to be there and protesting and making sure that the world heard us when we said that we should be boycotting Beijing 2022. Our goal has yet to be reached because our goal is to move the games from Beijing. We do not think that China deserves to be hosting the Olympics whatsoever, given their brutal human rights record. And we hope that all athletes, broadcasters, sponsors, and all people of conscience will join us in boycotting Beijing 2022.
Yeah, so I think we are fortunate enough, Chumi, I, and Van Fern, the other activists, to live in countries that should, no, they don't always do, but should allow us the right to protest. And I feel that we need to be doing all we can, taking advantage of those privileges to raise awareness of the human rights abuses that Chinese Communist Party carry out and try to hide. Obviously, during the 2008 Olympics, there was a Tibetan uprising and that the protests were brutally put down. I think the Dalai Lama said that there were around 400 Tibetans killed during those protests and over 1,000 went missing. So they have no right to protest. And anytime they do try to protest, they're arrested, they're tortured, sometimes killed in prison. So I definitely feel that, yes, I knew that there was a chance of arrest going in, but I felt that if we don't do that, as people that have that privilege, then Tibetans can't. So, yeah, I was more than happy to take that risk of arrest to raise the awareness of the situation in Tibet and in Hong Kong and East Turkestan as well.
I know you travel all the way from Canada and the UK and probably are facing complicated legal process now. And also, what would happen when the legal procedure continues? What kind of complications could it bring to your life and probably international travel?
Yes, it is complicated. It is not fun having a charge. It was my first time experiencing jail. And it definitely was not fun. But like Jason mentioned again, compared to what people, our brothers and sisters have to go through back home, is almost like it was nothing. And each time, moments before I jumped out with Jason and Fern, the video that I posted on my social media of Tibetans trying to cross the Nangpa La Pass, where they're being shot by Chinese militants, continued to play in my head. And when that happened, you know, I got the courage and strength to stand up and speak what I needed to say.
I think not only is our message to the CCP that we are watching and we're not going to stay quiet and we refuse to stay silent, but we also have a strong message for the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, that how can they give the Winter Olympics another Olympics to Beijing after what happened in 2008? And in 2014, when the IOC awarded the Winter Games to Sochi in Russia, there was lots of controversy over that Russia's anti-gay rights. So after that Olympics, the IOC added a clause to the Olympic Charter. And that clause says any form of discrimination with regard to a country or a person on grounds of race, religion, politics, gender or otherwise is incompatible with belonging to the Olympic movement. So how can they have that written in their charter and then award China the Winter Olympics literally like the next year or a couple of years after? It just doesn't. I always see saying one thing with their charters and their ceremony, and then doing their actions are saying something completely different. And by giving Beijing the Winter Olympics, it's just it's mind-boggling. To be perfectly honest, I just don't understand how they can just live themselves by giving the IOC by giving Beijing the Winter Olympics.
The Winter Olympics in Beijing are scheduled to begin next February. What could people that are concerned do in the next 2 months before the game started? And what are some of your plans next?
Mm-hmm. First and foremost, there is still time left. You know, the campaign is not over. We have to continue putting pressure on the IOC to move the games. And if not, I'm sure you folks have seen, we have already started a new campaign where we're asking for athletes to join us. We want athletes to join us in standing up for human rights, whether or not they decide to participate in the Olympic Games coming up in China. We want them to reach out to us, educate themselves, you know, have a conversation with a Chinese dissident, have a conversation with a Tibetan, a Hong Kong or a Uyghur about what is happening inside because of the brutal authoritarian state the Chinese Communist Party is. And then we're also having conversations with broadcasters and sponsors. We want to hold sponsors like Airbnb, Coca-Cola, Intel, and other companies accountable for making money off of this genocide. When we allow this Beijing Olympics to happen, we are helping Chinese government legitimize the genocide that they're doing. The whole purpose of why they want to host these Olympics, even though the Chinese government pretends to not care about what the international community thinks, they continue to seek this seal of approval. They want to seek legitimacy. They want to be known in the world as a superpower, right? And so this way of seeking legitimacy is not something we can allow the Chinese government to have. Hence why we must continue the work that we're doing, be it educating, raising awareness, and getting athletes, sponsors, and broadcasters to join our plight. And the fight is not over after the Olympics, right? The genocide is still being committed. Tibetans are being incredibly repressed under all of these laws. I implore all of us to continue doing the work because it's not over yet.
From a local point of view, it's a case of talking to your local government officials. So in the UK, your MP, and telling them that you do not feel that your Olympic Association. So again, in the UK, it's the British Olympic Association. If the IOC refuse to move the games, the country's Olympic associations can say, we're not going to send athletes.
Shimi, I know you collaborated with Hong Kongers, Uyghurs, and Chinese dissidents to call for boycotting Winter Olympics in Beijing. What were in common among the groups, and what was the strategy gathering smaller groups together?
First and foremost, I think the common denominator is that we're all humans of conscience. We care about other people. And second of all, we are all somehow connected by the authoritarian state of the Chinese government. We are subjected to the violence and the repression that is being put on us by the Chinese government. So whether it is Uyghurs who are currently being eliminated, you know, in these concentration camps, or if it's Tibetans or Southern Mongolians whose children as young as 3 years old are being forced to go to schools away from their home and being forced to learn Chinese instead of their own mother tongue. And then the Hong Kongers, I mean, it's without having to say anything, the world has seen how the Chinese government has brutally destroyed the Hong Kong's democracy. And currently, you know, young leaders like Joshua Wong are still in jail. Without anything to be said, like, there was a common ground for all of us to unite because we all understood each other's pain. And if I were to speak personally, the pain of not being able to contact your family members, the pain of not being able to know what your own homeland looks like. There were so many parts, whether it was personal or as global as being a global citizen, there were common factors and denominators that brought us together to call for this campaign. And ultimately, the campaign is to hold the Chinese government accountable and tell the world that this is going to be our red line, that we were not going to let the Chinese government seek the legitimacy and approval that they want from the international world and within their own country while they're committing all of these brutal human rights atrocities.
For me, obviously, I work at Free Tibet and very much an allyship with all other Tibet support groups, so students of Free Tibet, the Tibet community in Britain. So we're very focused on making these connections with all other groups, not just Tibetan support groups, but like you have mentioned, Hong Kong support groups and Uyghur support groups and these other support groups that face the oppression and repression that the Chinese Communist Party are forcing on them. So, yeah, that's...
Jason, I know you're from the UK and now working for Free Tibet. What makes you become an activist on this issue? And would you urge more British or American joining the cause?
Of course. So it's a cause that impacts everyone. It's a human rights issue. This isn't just looking at Tibetans. This is looking at the severe human rights abuses being carried out in various places across the world. So I definitely call for anyone in the UK or anyone in America or around the world. I know Students for Free Tibet have chapters all over the world.
In light of the current events happening and the current conversations around the world of COP26 and climate justice, it is appalling to know that, you know, Tibet has no representation at such big platforms where climate is being discussed, where the poster of these events are usually the snow mountains of Tibet. Tibet is known as the rooftop of the world, and it's currently, you know, melting three times faster than the rest of the world. And so if people are talking about climate and talking about caring for the climate, it's about time that we put Tibet back on the map and have these conversations with Tibetan representation, because if Tibet melts, and if we don't do anything about the Tibetan situation and the Tibetan plateau, you know, the downstream countries, which is about almost 2 billion people in the world, their lives will be affected. And China currently has been the biggest manufacturer of dams, and they're creating dams that redirect the water that flows down into the downstream countries. And that in itself is going to be another big global issue that needs to be talked about. And so whether or not you care about Tibetan issues or Hong Kong issues or Uyghur issues or Chinese issues, if you care about the climate, this is something to care about, because, you know, if there is no Mother Earth, then none of us would be here.
Jason, I know that you were participating in the COP26. Could you tell us some of your actions and how does it turn out?
Yeah, so it's been absolutely amazing. Well, first, as Chimu said, the most ridiculous thing is it's no Tibetan representation actually on the negotiating table in COP. And China have not sent any key officials over, so that they straight away have signaled their intention that they're not going to take part, or they're not interested in trying to reduce carbon emissions. They've set targets that are absolutely ridiculous, and almost it's just a massive greenwashing. So whilst we've been here, we've had on Saturday there was the climate justice protest, and in Glasgow itself there are estimated 100,000 people came and marched through Glasgow, and the Tibetan community and from the UK and from other parts of the world was absolutely amazing. We were at the front of the protest for pretty much the entire day. It didn't matter where you were, you could see Tibetan flags. The Tibetans that were here were singing and chanting and dancing the entire way. I think we handed out over 2,000 leaflets to people. There were countless interviews with local media and world media to raise the awareness of the Tibet climate crisis. So it's been absolutely amazing being up here and seeing how passionate the Tibetan community in the UK and around the world are and can be. So yeah, it's been absolutely excellent.
In Xi Jinping's tenure, any major differences you have seen for your cause and for the future of Tibet? And we know that he will continue to rule China for another 5 years, if not even longer. Do you feel like it will get more challenging for Tibet's future? And what do you expect him to do in the near future?
The fact that Wang Juzhang got promoted from East Turkestan to now become the party leader of Tibet, the Tibetan Autonomous Region is what they call, in itself is a statement that the Chinese government does not care about what the international world had to say about East Turkestan's treatment. A lot of governments have recognized that a genocide is being happening and they want it to stop. But the Chinese government clearly has not taken anything into consideration and in fact promoted the guy that was responsible for all of those actions in East Turkestan to Tibet so that he can continue doing what he has done in East Turkestan in Tibet. If that is not a sign for the international world that the situation is becoming worse, I don't know what else to tell you. Previously, we've also talked about Chen, who was responsible for Tibet initially for the 5 years, the TAR region, and then he was transferred to East Turkestan. And it was known that a lot of the surveillance systems and the re-education camp tactics that were implemented in East Turkestan were actually first trialed in Tibet and the Tibetan Autonomous Region. So there's this negative feedback looping that the Chinese government is doing and trialing with East Turkestan and Tibet that we cannot allow as the international community to continue happening. Just from my personal experience, the amount of Tibetans that are able to escape into India, Nepal has decreased tremendously. You know, there was a time when we would hear about Tibetans escaping into Nepal and India. Nowadays, you know, I don't hear any stories about anyone being able to escape into India and Nepal and seek, have freedom. And that in itself tells me how the situation inside of Tibet is worsening. And without being said, China currently has surveillance systems that are so advanced, and Tibet is so surveilled that 24/7 at every meter there is some sort of surveillance happening, which is, you know, restricting people's movement, in addition to the socio political democratic every way of repression that one person can imagine. And then the Human Rights Watch report on language has been a testament to how the Chinese government is trying to eliminate the Tibetan identity by, you know, erasing their mother tongue language from all of the local schools.
It's the education side that is for me, it's really shocking. The forced closure of Tibetan language schools, the arrest of Tibetan teachers. So there's Rinchen Kim, who was recently arrested, I think, on August the 1st. She was a school teacher at a Tibetan language school. She was arrested, given no reason for her arrest, and has since disappeared. She's got a young daughter and a husband. I have no idea where she is or what her health, how her current health is or anything. And she was arrested just for teaching Tibetan. That was it. So the crackdown on Tibetan language and Tibetan education, and obviously what they want to do is to stop children growing up speaking Tibetan. They want them to grow up speaking Chinese. The CCP want them to grow up speaking Chinese and to try and completely systematically eradicate that Tibetan culture and way of life. So for me, I think that's something that's a real pressing issue at the moment, and something that really needs global focus.
感谢您收看今天的美国观察，我们明天再见。